setting customer expectations in auto service beyond the customer is always right. Join passionate automotive trainer and coach Andrew Uglow as he explores how successful workshops manage and install customer expectations. In this episode, you'll learn why the customer is always right mindset can be flawed, discover how leading businesses like Apple set and deliver on service promises, and understand the real impact of under-promising and over-delivering. Along the way, Andrew shares some practical insights about service pricing, timing, and the true meaning of customer ownership in modern automotive businesses. I'm your co-host, Anthony Pearl, and this is the Frictionless Workshop Podcast. Let's get cranking.
Andrew, I want to talk to you about this whole concept of expectations, and the expectations particularly that a client has, because that's going to have an enormous impact on a business. And where do those expectations come from, and how do you actually manage that expectation? It's a big idea, but it's so important.
So one of the big metrics for business is customer satisfaction. And there is a whole bunch of very, very clever people with a whole lot of letters before and after their names who have written some outstanding material on customer satisfaction, delighting customers, customer service processes, all that sort of stuff. And so I feel like the newbie in the room when I talk about this. You know, who's this guy? So the question, though, about where do customer expectations come from, they don't magically just form out of thin air. There's actually some patterns to how customers form their expectations. But understand that customers will form expectations. And so the thinking, generally speaking, has been that the customer's always right. You know, customer comes in and says, I want da-da-da-da-da-da-da, well, the customer's always right. And so we have to react or respond to these customers' expectations. And I'm going to go, that's profoundly flawed. Just like, what if the customer's expectations are outside of what's within the realms of physics? Now what do? Do we change the laws of physics to please the customer? You know, I've got a whatever car I've got and I want a major service. The service is going to take 6 hours and you've got 45 minutes to do it in, or else I'm going to be upset. Well, help me understand how that's even reasonable. The customer can have the expectation, but that doesn't mean that the expectation has any foundation in reality. And so I go back to, well, the question, well, where do customers get their expectations from? And sometimes they come from past experience. Last time I was in your business, you did my service in 1 hour, and now you're going to tell me it's going to take 3. Well, from the customer's perspective, that's a very reasonable, you did it before, why can't you do it again? And at the same time, the customer doesn't realize that today we're 5 people short. You know, 2 people are away on training, 1's at trade school, and 2 called in sick of work, or sick, or I don't know why, they're having a rostered sick day off. Whatever the reason is, they're not here. And so we don't have the resource to be able to serve you the way we would normally serve you. And so it's simply going to take longer. And of course, the customer gets upset. Well, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, but now we've got a variation between the customer's expectation and what's possible out of the business. The other thing that drives customers' expectations is they went to Apple, or they went to insert other business somewhere else, you know. And of course, Apple are outstanding generally with their customer service. They have a very good process. They have very good people. And so if we go back to the equation of what makes for good customer service, well, we have talented people, talking about talent management. We have good processes that facilitate talented people being able to apply their talent. And believe it or not, Apple actually install the customer's expectation. Yeah. Now, people go, well, what do you mean? Well, Apple tells you exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. And then they deliver on that because they installed the expectation. And I go, well, how is that any different to what a workshop should be doing? We should be installing expectations too. Because if we don't, someone else will. And so now we might have a variance between the customer expectation and what we can do, or what we can do today because of the variety. And I, you know, whenever I think of customer service, I love the Diblett cartoon or comic strip. They were talking about customer service. And one of the characters says, you know, customer service surveys are down. What are we going to do about it? And the first person, the person responds and says, well, you know, the customer expectations are this, that, and the other, and how are we ever going to meet that kind of thing? And the second person says, well, the customer's always right. The customer's always right. You need to meet the customer expectation. And a third person that's watching on from the background mutters under their breath, you know, yes, the customer's always right and should be punished for their insolence. Just go, maybe that's a different way of doing customer service, but yeah. I'm not sure that it's going to show up in the customer satisfaction report as a positive.
You know, the concept of under-promise and over-deliver is a very simple one, but it really, even the simple thing, if you, you know, the customer drives up or customer's coming in to book his car in for service and you set the expectation that it'll be done in an hour and it ends up taking two, you're not going to endear yourself to the customer. But if you do the flip side of things and you say, look, if you arrive here at 7 and we take the car in then, it should be ready by about mid to late morning. So you're setting the expectation that it's going to be around 11 to 11.30 that it'll be finished. And if you finish that car at 9 o'clock, that's fantastic for the client. You know, then you
potentially.
Well, you
some customers would go, you finish at 9. Why didn't you tell me be ready at 9? I could have done da 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 da, and they're still upset.
Well, yes, there is always that, and
some customers are special for
absolutely. Some people will find a way to be critical no matter what happens.
This is true.
But those in that simple idea though of setting the expectations, as you say, you know, whether things will be done on the day or not, what level of satisfaction that they will have with it. I think one of the simple things is that you also have to realize that some clients' expectations have been set by previous experience at other places.
Yeah.
And that makes it more challenging. I mean, dumbing it down to a simple example is that I've been to places where my car's being serviced and they will clean the vehicle as part of it. They'll do, you know, a reasonably thorough car wash. Like it'll come out looking good. They'll do a quick vacuum. That's all part of the service. Now, then you go to the next place and they don't deliver on that, you go, why isn't my car as clean as it was when the last time it came out? Now, there can be all sorts of reasons why that may not happen. And so it's about setting those expectations from the beginning. And part of it might be a price thing too, and a time thing, and any number of different things. Like, you know, the last place you paid $500 for the service, this place you're paying $250 for the service. Well,
that makes a difference.
It does make a difference. There's
absolutely
no time and resources to clean the car at the $250 mark. There is at the $500 mark.
The Frictionless Workshop podcast is brought to you by Solutions Culture. For details on how to get in touch with Andrew, consult the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now, back to the podcast.
Right. And so a couple of questions that are worth asking, like if you were to look at, because we measure and most people have, or most businesses, whether regardless of the brand, there'll be some sort of customer satisfaction tied to a financial result. So a lot of the industry use a net promoter score where you have customers rank you 1 to 10 and anything 6 and below was considered a detractor. And so they're basically saying I would have been better off being in a coma than bringing my car to you and having you service it. 7 and 8 are called neutral. We didn't tick off the customer, but we certainly didn't impress them. And 9 and 10 are what we consider promoters. Like we met or exceeded their expectation. And so there's a method of calculating. You subtract the number of detractors that you have from the number of promoters that you have, discount the people who were neutral, and that'll give you a percentage. And depending upon which brand, depending upon which industry, like which part of the industry, so are you in aftermarket, are you a dealer, are you dealing with luxury cars, are you dealing with more, you know, common vehicles, prestige stuff, there's different metrics for this sort of thing. But generally speaking, the rule of thumb is if you can be over 50%, you're doing okay. And ideally, like if you can't get to 70%, well, you've got opportunity to improve in what you're doing. There's also other metrics around fixed first visit and those sorts of things. Did we fix the customer's concern the first time, every time? And that matters. That's a thing. And let me just take off my customer hat for a minute and put on my business hat and be Mr. Business Person. I absolutely want it fixed first time. Rework is profoundly expensive. And my inner Scotsman has some real challenges with that. Like, why am I paying to do this job twice? No, we're not doing that. And so business hat off, customer hat back on. There's all of the anguish and pain of dropping your car off and making all the additional arrangements and all that sort of stuff. No one wins rework, and it is worth being slow or delayed the first time rather than doing rework on a whole variety of different levels. And again, the question comes in to where do customers get their expectation from? Well, that goes back to who has their ear. And who has their ear and what are they saying? If they're taking their expectations from previous experience at other businesses, if they're taking their experience from, you know, I rang Amazon and they delivered my thing the very next day, why can't you people do that with your parts? Completely different contexts. And of course, customers have a challenge in that they don't have access to the same depth of information, the same quality of information, or the same volume of information when they form their expectations. And so this is why we have people talking about or going onto forums and stuff like that. And this is, again, a point to one of the many laments that technicians have is customers go to a forum and all the people on the forum are discussing a concern about a particular car or a particular concern. And they then come to the understanding that their car may have or does have that concern. And so they present to the dealership and say, I was on the forum, I have this concern. And that may be entirely invalid, but the challenge is we've got the customer expectation. And so we talk in technical world about two different skill sets. We talk about fixing the customer versus fixing the car, and they're not the same thing.
And part of it too, Andrew, isn't it about it attracting your ideal client? Because if you set the expectations to match who your ideal client is, then you're going to attract those people. And that's part of the process, right? I mean, going back to sort of the cleaning example, if you set the expectations, say, well, we take a little bit longer, but we make sure your car is cleaned and do all of those things, then that's, you know, this is the ideal client. If you are on the client's hat and you say, look, I've got an hour to get my car fixed. I don't really care about it being cleaned. I care about it being done quickly. That is it. This may not be the place for you. The next place may be the place for you. We do it clean, you know, quickly and get it done because we know you're in a hurry. Well, again, sets different expectations.
Right. Absolutely. The other thing that's worth considering here with customers' expectation is when does the service experience end?
Mm.
Like we talk with sales professionals frequently and we ask that question, when does the sales experience finish? Well, is it when you hand the keys over and take the check? That might be when it finishes for the sales professional, but what about for the customer? When did their sales experience finish? And the same thing is true then for service customers. When does their service experience finish? Because it could be very different from the business. Car came in, we did the work, did the road test, quality check, you know, washed the car or didn't, whatever it was. Some places charge extra, some places that's included. We hand the keys back to the customer, you know, do all of the bits that we need to do. And from the business's perspective, we're finished. But what about from the customer's perspective? And who's taking ownership of that? And this is the piece that I want to really dive into here is, well, if we don't take ownership as the business, if we're not taking ownership of the entire customer experience, someone else will. They will get their information from somewhere else. They will get their information from sources that may or may not be reliable, sources that have a vested interest, sources that could in fact be absolutely spot on, but they will get their information from somewhere else if they don't get it from us. And so there has been an opportunity to improve would be a really nice way to say this around customer ownership. And I like to use the term installing the customer experience and doing it at a micro level, like baby steps. Here's now that you've bought the car, here's what you can expect. This is how you bring your car into service. This is where you park. This is what the discussion we're going to have. And you're going to see this, and you're going to see this, and you're going to see this, and take all of the mystery out of it, and explain, you know, we only take bookings in 2 hour lots because we can't effectively look after your car at speed. It just isn't going to produce the quality that you deserve. And so these are the sorts of things that need to be in the communications, in the text messages, in the emails or the videos. And I know of aftermarket businesses particularly who are doing this very, very well. And perhaps the big distinction between dealer businesses and aftermarket businesses is that dealer businesses have a pipeline of new customers because they buy the car, whereas aftermarket businesses don't have that luxury. And so they have to find their customers. And given the shortage of technicians at this point in time, that is less of a challenge because everyone's booked out 2 weeks because there just isn't enough people to do the work, which of course presents some challenges around customers' expectations. Oh, but I'm going away next week. Yes, maybe you are, but not with your car serviced by us.
So, and it's hard too, isn't it? Because some of these expectations, as you say, in a dealer sense, are set by the manufacturer who say, right, you know, the first service is included. Service costs are fixed at this price.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of those things set a deal of expectation, you know, for the client in the first place.
Yeah, and not without cause. Like I think some things spot on. The challenge is, and I go back to the Pareto, right? We've got 80-20. 80% of the time, customers walk away happier than a dog with two tails. Like everything was done, met or exceeded their expectations. They had no problems. They had no dramas. The challenge really becomes when we didn't. And the greater challenge then is, was that because we screwed up? Or was that because the customer's expectation was inaccurate or invalid? And so I go back to the whole idea of ownership. Well, who owns the customer's experience in our business? Well, we do. The business does. That's our job. And so we start with pre-installing before they come in. And then we continue the idea of ownership afterwards. And if this gets back to the way we take ownership is, or the tool that we use for taking ownership is called communication. That's the channel that we use, or the tool that we use to install expectation and to take ownership afterwards. It's a lovely broad generalization. Oh, we communicate with the customer. Well, yeah, great. How specifically do you do that? What specifically do you say? When do you say that? What shouldn't be said? Because there's things that you don't say to a customer.
Thank you for listening to the Frictionless Workshop podcast. For details on how to get Andrew working with you and your technicians, take a look at the show notes. There's also a link to some special content you can access. I'm Anthony Pearl, reminding you to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.